Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Julie Allen. Hello, Julie.
Hello.
So Julie's a local author here, and she's got a new book. So we're going to talk a little bit about, we had a story recently in our paper about an event she helped coordinate at the First United Methodist Church here in Jefferson City in the NAACP that kind of stems around one of her books. It was kind of a talking point from it. So Julie kind of set the stage for us as to what the event was.
The event was called A Night to Remember. It was really in partnership with First United Methodist Church, the local area churches, and the NAACP. To remember, spend a night remembering individuals who were enslaved. In this instance, they were individuals enslaved in Osage County. That's where I grew up. And also to really have discussions around what we can do as individuals to look at our past, talk about our past, why that's important, and also look at how we can be better today.
Yeah. You know, one thing, as I was reading Jeff's story, and we have a link to it in our show notes here, but one thing I really was touched by was your acknowledgement growing up in Osage County. You didn't really necessarily know that this history existed.
Right. I had no idea. I actually, our family is very big. They always thought it was important for us to tell our family story as far as where we came from, what we thought was important. And so I knew a lot about the fact that our primary relatives, my great-great-grandfather and some of his relatives, had fought on the Union side and the different disabilities and injuries that they'd received and those types of things. But I had no idea there were actually people enslaved in Osage County. It was never discussed.
Yeah.
So it was quite a surprise to me.
So how did you come upon the realization?
Well, I came upon it by doing some work. My dad had suggested that he was really interested in writing. This was probably maybe 5 or 7 years ago. He was interested in writing his stories and what he knew about the family. And so we started doing a joint effort. A lot of the family joined in, and Dad and I did most of the storytelling or writing. I did a lot of the research for historical purposes or genealogical purposes. And so we self-published a book about the history of the Allen family. From there, I actually also went back and did another sort of a follow-up book, self-published. And when I was doing that research, I came across slave schedules in Osage County. And that's what got me thinking, I didn't know there were people enslaved in Osage County. And so I started digging into it a little more.
Okay. So for those who don't know, including myself, what's a slave schedule?
A slave schedule is on the census. Every 10 years, a census is done. And in 1850 and in 1860, they actually had special schedules for people that were classified as slaves. They were not named. They were described.
Okay. Would this be basically property then?
Is that why they were? They were considered property. It was a very transactional, very economical. It was really around economics and, you know, making money.
Yeah.
And so, yes, they were considered property. In fact, most of the time, they made up most of the value of an estate or almost all of the value, a significant portion of the personal property. And unless they had a large amount of property, a lot of times they would be a lot of the wealth of the people that enslaved them.
Yeah. So how rampant was it? I mean,
it was pretty extensive. It was actually very surprising to me. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think like in 1860, 350 or 360 slaves. Again, that may not be exact.
Right.
But as I looked through records, I realized there were a lot of transactions, a lot of selling and bequeathing and giving of people that were enslaved in between the schedules that really were never captured, and people coming in and out of the state that may not have hit a census.
Yeah.
So it was actually quite extensive. It really surprised me how extensive it was. It was a very big fabric of Osage County.
Wow. Do you know how prevalent it was in surrounding counties, Cole, Montauk, Callaway?
Cole County, I have actually started doing the same research. I plan on publishing, probably self-publishing, another book related to Cole County. Coal County was pretty extensive. It's bigger than Osage County. It was actually probably more populated. But it, yes, it's quite extensive in Coal County also.
Wow.
So Callaway County also. I would be surprised if there's any county in Missouri that did not have slaves.
Sure.
There may be, but it was actually fairly extensive in Missouri.
Okay. So you have these cold stat sheets here listing number of slaves. How do you get to the spot where you're able to tell the stories? Because you shared some of the stories at this event. So kind of show us how you got to the spot where you can really tell the narrative of what slavery looked like in Osage County.
The narrative I was able to pull out was related to different court records, whether it was probate court, criminal court, wills. Sometimes there were actually some interviews of people that had been enslaved in the early 1900s, 1930. So some of those interviews, and there was some work done at Osage County Historical Society that had pulled out some stories about people. So between those things, working with both Osage County Historical Society, going through all of the court records that were available, both online and in paper, Secretary of State's Archives Office, also a lot of military records related to quite a few of the men that were able to actually enlisted in what we call the Union Army today, and a fair number of them died in service. And so I had found those records. And also there were provost marshal records, because there was a U.S. provost marshal in each county that would have helped ensure, that the Union was being held and that the laws were being upheld. For instance, individuals who were Confederate sympathizers or who fought for the Confederate were actually sometimes required to leave the county, sometimes had a bond placed on them, and sometimes had to do oaths. I actually just ran across something in Coal County where an individual was fined because there were bushwhackers that killed a German individual, I would assume a Union individual, whether they fought or whether they were just a Union, loyal to the Union, and they had killed this man, and of course left a family. So the provost marshal actually assessed a fee against the families that were part of this effort. Now, whether they actually were involved in the murder, I couldn't tell by the record.
Right.
But they assessed a fee to this individual in Coal County in the amount of $800, and it would go directly to the family to support that family because they lost their means of support.
Sure.
So that's an example of in Coal County that I just found recently.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm unfamiliar with the term provost marshal. So what was his or her responsibility? It would have been his, I'm sure.
Right.
Given the time.
Right.
His responsibility.
Well, and I'm not an expert on the U.S. provost marshal, but they actually, like I said, were in, as far as I know, each county. For instance, in Osage, they had a provost marshal, an assistant provost marshal. And the story that I told to your reporter about Jim Lewis being murdered and the provost marshal getting a group of men to release the gentleman that had reported this murder, they were there to enforce the law because Missouri was a slave state. It was admitted as a slave state. I know a lot of times you hear people say, well, it really wasn't a slave state. No, it was admitted as a slave state. Slavery was legal in Missouri. We did not secede from the Union. However, we tried to. And, of course, in Jefferson City, the Union Army, the United States Army, came in so that they were not able to take the Capitol. But they tried to. That was the intent, was to actually run a Confederate state out of Jefferson City. So the provost marshal was really to make sure that the Union was upheld in each of the counties as much as they could, knowing that there were multiple viewpoints and multiple people willing to do different things,
sure,
you know, in a wartime war is ugly.
So you touched base on one of the characters that you, mm-hmm, you shared his story at the gathering. So kind of walk us through Jim Lewis's story.
Okay. Jim Lewis was a black man who was enslaved. His record shows when he actually enlisted in what's the USCT, United States Colored Troops, that when they enlisted, they had to tell who enslaved them. They usually described them, their height, their eye color, their hair color, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. If they had an occupation, what they had done, most often farming, was usually what those who enlisted. So he enlisted in the USCT. And in order to enlist in the USCT, first of all, you had to make your way to a recruiting station. I don't recall which one he enlisted in, probably Herman or Jefferson City, mm-hmm, one of those two. And so that alone took the ability to make your way. Of course, you're enslaved, so you're not supposed to be traveling on your own. That alone was a large danger to get to a recruiting station. But he made it, he enlisted, and where his mother was, the record does not tell. I call her Mother Lewis, but she was enslaved by somebody different.
Okay.
So once he was enlisted, he got written papers for he and six other troops, colored troops, to go back into Osage County to recruit additional troops, black individuals to serve, and to pick up possessions of his mother's from the person that had enslaved her. What those were, it seems odd today for that to have, yeah, been happening, but they were written orders, and of course he carried those orders with him because he was probably stopped, I'm sure, or at least was at risk of being stopped and questioned and in danger if he did not have papers like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to this individual's home. At the same time, there was another gentleman, a white free gentleman, who was loyal to the Union, who had went to that farm for business. What business, we don't know.
Okay.
But when Jim Lewis and the six soldiers approached, they talked, and for a minute, the person who enslaved his mother was friendly. Then he grabbed his gun, and he started shooting, and he yelled for his sons to come, and they started shooting. So some were injured, but they managed to escape, but Jim was felled to the ground. And they walked up to Jim, shot him twice in the forehead, point blank, and murdered him. So Jim was murdered, both because of his color and by being loyal to the country.
Right.
And this white Union man that was loyal to the Union, he went to the assistant provost marshal. He reported it. This is what happened. So the assistant provost marshal rode out with a group of men to the farm. The individuals were described as armed, heavily armed, all Confederate sympathizers. And they had actually been banned from the county because of their Confederate activity that they had been. So they weren't supposed to be there.
Okay.
So he took all their guns and told them, you're not supposed to be here. Well, in the meantime, after that, these individuals who murdered Jim went to the Osage County Constable, who, mm-hmm, was a Confederate sympathizer.
Okay.
They told him that Jim Lewis and a band of black men and this other gentleman had come, assaulted them with the attempt to murder them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was attempted murder. And they filed, you know, a complaint, basically. Back then, I think it was verbal, but they said this is what happened. So the constable went out and arrested the Union person who was telling the story.
Okay.
Who had reported this murder. So once the assistant U.S. Marshal learned of this, he got a group of men together and they rode and they freed the Union, loyal Union person.
Mm-hmm.
And the provost marshal organization investigated and said, no, he should have been freed. He should have been let loose. This was handled appropriately. And they turned it over to the local authorities, which meant it went back to the actual person who was a Confederate sympathizer who,
right,
was in law enforcement, and, yeah, he rearrested the gentleman.
So, no real surprise there.
Not surprise. So a bond was posted by quite a few, if I remember, half a dozen or more individuals in Osage County, of course, all men at that time, to free him.
Mm-hmm.
My great-grandfather was one of the ones that helped post the, mm-hmm, bond, and he went to trial. He and Jim Lewis were charged. Jim was dead, murdered, but,
right,
he was charged,
wow,
with attempted murder.
Yeah.
This would have been a hanging offense for him.
Mm.
He ultimately was acquitted, but just shows, first of all, how terrible war is. And secondly, you know, you have laws on the book and you hope that they bring justice, but they don't always bring justice. So, you know, it's a really good example of a terrible injustice done to a murder of a man, just a brutal murder of a man.
Yeah. Wow. Fascinating story.
Yeah.
So why share the story now?
Well, you know, all of our stories are important.
Sure.
And what you find is, I've actually had some people tell me, Julie, there's only one history. And I'm like, how can that be? In one family, you have different histories from each person. Okay.
Yeah.
There's not only one history. I'll give you an example. If you look at census from maybe the 1950s or 1960s, let's use 1960s because that would have been, my mother and dad would have been married, you know, in the early 1960s, probably a little before then. It would have showed a homemaker. And if it was dad, maybe a factory worker or a foreman.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, my mom was a farmer. So was my dad. But my mom was on the farm. So she was responsible for farming all day.
Mm.
You know, she was also a homemaker, obviously.
Right.
But she also sewed virtually all of our clothing, including coats. So she was a seamstress. Mm-hmm. She cooked very well. So she was at the least a cook and a chef. She kept all the books. So she was at the least a bookkeeper. So there's a lot of things that we do not tell in our stories that actually are much more complete.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to have accurate stories, but we also need to have inclusive and diverse stories. And we need to tell about what's really happened in our state. It's an important thing. And it also helps us sometimes realize, well, how does that apply to today? You know, how is it that our laws are today compared to back then?
Yeah.
What is it that, for instance, if you look, you look at the economics of slavery. How does that impact today? How did it impact back then? The same with whether you have individuals that are related to just how they lived, you know, how we all lived back then. Mm-hmm. We want to know it, right?
Right.
We're happy to tell our story.
Right.
But in reality, we should have justice in telling everybody's story.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't just be about a white person. You know, it shouldn't just be about men. It should be about what happened in the state and what happened in our counties. It's just important to remove that and not teach that in your schools is just, to me, it's unbelievable that I never knew that we did have slaves in Osage County. What did that mean? What were they like? What happened after then? These are things that you need to know.
Sure.
So,
well, that strikes me too. It always goes to empathy.
Sure.
If you don't
absolutely.
Know the other person's story, or why an issue or an element of the story is so important, until you really know their story, right?
Right.
I think that's what's fascinating about this idea of these conversations that you're having, is it's not necessarily some sort of agenda. It's more let's talk about it.
No, right? It's not an agenda.
Let's really understand what the whole story is behind our history and from where we come.
No, and I appreciate you saying that, because it really is. I mean, I am an amateur historian, you know, and I've always loved history. So it's about finding out our history.
Yeah.
You know, it's really is, and it does create empathy. It's sort of like when we had our event this week, we talked about what we can do today, and one of my things is move outside your bubble.
Yeah.
Start to learn about other people and actually volunteer with people that aren't like you. You'd be surprised at how it changes your perspective.
Yeah.
Because I haven't always been a member of the NAACP. I haven't always known this history. I haven't always understood the perspectives that I understand today. And I know that I have incomplete understanding that tomorrow I will probably have, you know, hopefully will have gained an understanding and empathy and relationships. You know, the more relationships you have, the more you can figure out a way to work things out.
Right. Well, and you build those connections. You know, as you were telling your history there, your personal history, I'm thinking, I grew up on a farm as well.
Yeah.
You know, and my father was a carpenter, but he did farming on the side, you know? And so it's one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, I get that. You know, it's a nuanced profession there. It's not, oh, he was just a carpenter.
Right.
No, he was doing these other things as well. And so there's a shared experience
Absolutely.
There of how you grew up that maybe you understand better some of the positions or the beliefs that you have as a person. And
right.
I think that's what's interesting is you get these diverse conversations going with folks of different backgrounds, incomes, ethnicities, gender. All of a sudden, there is a connection. You know,
right.
we may be night and day different.
Right. We are always going to have things we agree and disagree on.
Right. But so much of our current population is based on what we have in opposition to each other. You know,
right.
what's different
instead of what you have in common.
Exactly. So there's a shared
humanity, really.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, when you think about for instance, Principal Skaggs with Thorpe Gordon was at our event, and in part of our discussion, she said, you know, I was in college before I ever met anybody that looked like me in the educational system. So telling stories that are more diverse lets a little girl think, I could do that.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't I think about that? Or a person of color, a person of a different ethnicity, a person of a different religion.
Yeah.
It helps them see there are things in the world, there are opportunities. And guess what? It helps us realize it too. It helps us realize that little girl can grow up to be a doctor, which would have been unheard of however many years ago, or an astronaut. The same with Black people, that Black people can be leaders and teachers and educators and, you know, presidents and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It gives that feeling of hope and inspiration for all of us and just helps us be better, I think, a better community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we all are working together to lift each other up in community with each other.
Right. So what's been the reception from the gathering that you had?
Been very good. I actually have been really tickled and surprised, maybe not as surprised, but some, with the amount of interest that there has been. I actually, the Osage County Historical Society, they helped me a lot with this book.
Mm-hmm.
They were very supportive, and they invited me to come down and talk at their quarterly meeting. And it was a packed house. And for them, that was about, I think, 58 people.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of discussion. It was a lot of talk. And it was really great to hear people so interested in wanting to hear these stories. Now, most of them aren't good.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't good stories when you enslave somebody else. The bottom line is, it's brutal.
Right.
But it was really great to just talk to where I grew up and to just visit about what they knew and what I found in the book. And they were all really thrilled to have me come talk. So that was nice. And a lot of great reception here in Jefferson City. Actually, Pastor Dancer was telling us that the online had 106 people that connected. I was like, wow, you know, that's really great. And well, of course, it's recorded, so anybody can play it and listen to it. And I think sometimes people think, well, somebody's talking about that. You know, unpleasant things are hard to talk about. It's just uncomfortable. You know, you don't want to disagree with people. You don't want to have conflict, and you don't really talk about something difficult, which is probably why some of this history wasn't told.
Yeah.
Especially sometimes maybe in the country growing up, you usually just didn't talk about hard things,
right.
You know. But even with that, I think people are interested in talking about it and hearing about it. And I think more people than not hopefully realize we're not talking about this to make somebody feel bad about something that happened 150 years ago. Now, do I feel bad? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I will be honest with you. When I wrote the book, there were many times I would have to quit writing it and researching it. There are really bad stories, you know, and the way we treated people was appalling.
Yeah.
You know, it's just hard to imagine how you can societally come up with these laws that are acceptable and you live with them. And then you look back on them and you see how terribly wrong they were.
Yeah.
So, but still, my hope is, and from what I've heard from people, you know, I haven't really heard anybody say, oh, you shouldn't talk about this, or you're doing this to make us feel bad. No, I haven't heard anybody say that. You know, nothing like that. Or you have an agenda and you're just trying to do this or this. No, I really haven't heard that. So that's really great.
You know, but I will say with the stories, the thing that strikes me about them too is you're right. I mean, there are horrendous elements mm-hmm. of the story, but then you think about that indomitable spirit of those blacks who lived through this, through their courage yes. and their strength, not to mention folks like your great-grandfather
yes.
who came to assist, right? Who stepped forward and said, no, right. this is not right. So, I mean, there's always two sides
there's
to the coin
always,
there,
yeah. Right? There's always people who step forward and do heroic things. Yeah. And there are some people who I call them our sheroes and heroes. I mean, these black people were our heroes, and they actually helped build Osage County.
Yeah.
I am who I am today because of them.
Absolutely.
As much as my relatives and the white people that built Osage County. So I really feel grateful to them and humbled. I wish they hadn't have had to be in Osage County under those conditions. But I do know that, yes, they were human beings, and they sought for love and happiness underneath what they were dealt, you know, with the physical slavery that they had. And I find it really, the story that I shared the other night related to after the Civil War, the Freedmen's Bureau was in Missouri for a time, and they were in the deeper South for quite a bit longer. But people actually wrote to them saying, I've lost my family. I don't know where they are. And there was actually a newspaper started in the South that people could pay $2 and put in, I'm looking for, you know, whether it's a mother, sister, brother, son, whatever. And the people were literally, you know, torn apart. The families were torn apart almost from the beginning as far as because they were traded and given and sold so much.
Mm-hmm.
So this shows you a little bit of that spirit of, you know, we're all humans and family's important.
Sure.
And that work that they did to try to find their family when they were able to, when they were free, is really poignant, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it shows some of that human spirit and people helping after they became free.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, in Missouri, there was a large German population. And, of course, most of them were very anti-slavery and worked for the Union. And so they actually also, a lot of people stepped forward to make a difference.
Sure.
So, yeah, some great stuff, too. And, unfortunately, I don't have any writings from the people who were enslaved, right?
Right.
So their records are literally destroyed. I mean, they had no records because they were banned from reading or writing.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, we don't hear their voice. But hopefully this gives them a little bit of voice.
Absolutely. So, in our show notes, we'll also include a link to the taped version
okay.
of the gathering.
Sounds great.
What are the next steps as far as do you plan on having further public meetings?
Actually, I actually have at the landing a book club discussion. I don't remember the exact date, but it's in August. And our First United Methodist Church has a book club in August. It'd be the first Sunday in August afternoon. And so we have discussion. We're actually doing the book.
Mm.
So that's actually my next steps. And after that, we'll see. You know, I'm spending time on the Cole County work. It will take me a while. This book took me a few years. The Cole County might take me longer than that. So it might be a while for Cole County. We'll see. I've actually found quite a bit so far. But, yeah, we'll just keep bringing that discussion forward. Anybody who's interested in talking about it or interested in learning more, they're always welcome to contact me through the paper. And we're happy to come talk. I know that Rod is always happy to come talk
mm-hmm.
to anybody, and we would be happy to sit down with any groups, whether it's Rotary groups or organizations or churches or whatever. Sometimes people think, well, it's Osage County. Maybe it doesn't apply to us. But, you know, first of all, a lot of people from Osage County live here or work here or originally came from Osage County.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's only, what, 25, 30
right.
miles away.
Right.
And the interesting thing is we're all very similar, you know, so what happened in Osage County is a different story in Cole, but also the same story.
Sure.
It'd be great to continue talking about it and what does it mean for us today, and how can we also tell our students some of these stories and let them have discussions about what it means.
All right. Well, Julie, let's slide in a commercial here. So
okay.
if a listener wants to get a copy of your book, how might they get one?
They can go to Downtown Book and Toy.
Okay.
They keep copies of the book. They can also go on to Amazon. It is self-published, so you would do History of Enslaved People of Osage County by Julie Allen. It's sold at cost because I don't have any interest. You know, this is not something I really have an interest in profiting off of. So, yeah, they could do it either of those two ways.
All right. Well, Julie, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.